For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. Oh, God, it's not Superbook Sports. I keep doing that. It's Autograph. Jesus. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Dark, and I am excited to talk about last night's Denver Nuggets win as the Nuggets defeat the Los Angeles Lakers once again. Final score, 112-105. Very excited to see everybody in here. Very excited to see Nuggets fans just vibing out, having a grand old time, because good God, is this fun. It's a lot of fun to be in this position, and very reminiscent of last year's playoffs in a lot of ways, and lots of ways that I didn't expect. I thought that Denver would be a little bit more rattled at various points. I thought that there'd be some gaps in the armor, some chinks, if you will. Chinks in the armor, of course. That is not the case. Denver has found ways to be successful. They have found ways to be dominant once again. And holy hell, does it feel like Denver is just like, I mean, they're coming into their own. As they do. As, like, they always say, wait. They always say, be patient. Like, we know what we have. We understand. We can turn it on in the playoffs. And then they have a loss like they did in game 81, where you have to think about it again. And you're wondering, okay, is this real? Are they going to do this again? And they did. They are very, very good. Maybe even great. I think a lot of people believe that they are once again great. We'll wait to see what happens in future rounds to see whether that is actually true. But at this moment in time right now, the Nuggets own so much mental headspace in Los Angeles that they could build a mansion. Maybe they might even take up a whole city block, because they are absolutely dominating the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's every time. It doesn't matter if it's in Denver, if it's in Los Angeles, if it's on the moon, if it's on the sun. They do not care. They just beat the Lakers every time. How insane is that? If you're a long-term Nuggets fan, you know that this is weird. You know that this is not normal. But it's very nice to be able to experience it regardless. And Denver last night did it exactly the way that they did it in Game 1. Maybe not in Game 2. Game 2, I think, was a special commodity of its own. But it does just feel like Denver, like, they've got enough mental headspace here. And they are well on their way to doing stuff. It's great. Very excited for everybody to be in here. We're going to talk about all of the layers of last night's game. We'll get into just where the Lakers are cooked and what's actually going to happen here. But we're also going to talk about how this is a deja vu moment and how this is exactly like last season, in my opinion. Just in a lot of different ways, but especially between the two Lakers series. But first, we got to go over what happened in the game. We got to talk about every little bit of layers there. Not like go into too much depth, because I know that everybody's already seen it. Everybody's already watched several highlight reels. I understand that. Denver came out of there immediately down 8-0 after one timeout. Michael Malone was like, yeah, you guys weren't ready to play, and calls a timeout immediately. Lots of run-out dunks, some turnovers, some sloppy play from Denver. Jokic was really the only guy kind of keeping Denver in the game. KCP hit a three at one point. But Denver was struggling to shoot. They were struggling to space. And it really was just Joker in that first quarter that was keeping the Nuggets afloat, despite the fact He had two fouls, and he had two fouls within like 4 minutes, and had to play through foul trouble for another 7 minutes. And that probably affected his defense a little bit, probably affected the Nuggets a little bit. They were down by double digits, 33-23, after the first quarter. It didn't even take them until the first half to be down double digits. It's crazy. But then Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon come back in, and Denver plays this bench lineup that features Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Justin Holiday. And for the first time, you could really see the vision with that group this year. For the first time. And actually, you know, I've seen the vision before, but like in the playoffs is what I mean. That group was a hustling unit. That group was doing a fantastic job of putting pressure on the Lakers, even if they weren't perfect, even if they weren't shooting that well. Jamal Murray did a nice job of running the show on the offensive end, got an offensive rebound for himself and put up a basket, and just did a nice job of getting to the mid-range. And it was a little bit better than where he was in game two, to be clear. But the real keys, in my opinion, to that stretch were Peyton Watson and Aaron Gordon. Peyton Watson, a couple blocks in that second quarter stretch. Aaron Gordon grabbing offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds, getting to the paint, just dominating, doing everything physically, working harder than the Lakers were willing to work, and just doing a great job of keeping Denver in it despite the fact that the shots weren't falling. Like, Christian Brown hasn't really shot the ball well this series. Justin Holiday goes 0 of 4 in 8 minutes last night, 0 of 4 from 3. Peyton Watson 0 of 1. Reggie Jackson did hit a 3 in the third quarter, did turn his ankle immediately after that, so I'll get to that in just a little bit. But like, Jamal Murray, 1 of 6 from 3, despite the fact that it looked like he got the mid-range back a little bit more. He was 7 of 15 from 2, not necessarily the most efficient number, but still did a better job, I think, of sort of running the middle of the floor, in my opinion. But Jokic comes back in, the starters come back in that kind of mid-second quarter range, and Denver, they're playing pretty good defense. The Lakers are kind of bailing them out a little bit because they're not shooting the ball that well. But the Nuggets aren't shooting the ball well either, so they can't quite get over the top in that situation. And they're down 4 heading into halftime. But you certainly don't think that, oh yeah, this game's out of reach, so there's no way that they could come back in this one. No. I think everybody and their mother believed that the Nuggets were going to come back in this one because they had done it, well, 10 times before. And because they had, like, that was just not a margin. Like, 4 points is nothing for Denver. And they clearly proved it coming out of the third quarter. They started the third quarter 20-8, immediately took a lead, and then they got it up to double digits. And from there on, the Lakers were just defeated. They had nothing. Absolutely nothing. Anthony Davis scored like 2 points in the fourth quarter. LeBron James, I think, does a generally good job in those situations, but he also had some pretty big mistakes, took some pretty odd shots, definitely didn't do his team any favors with some of the decisions that he made. And then D'Angelo Russell, like, that's the big one, right? Like, that is the big one for the Lakers, where 0 points in this game after, like, it was 7 of 11 from 3 in game 2. But in game 3, 0 of 7 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3. Did nothing. And then, Jonathan, I did see this video. Have you seen the video of D'Lo on the bench? Absolutely. That is a guy who has given up on his team. And that is a guy who maybe the team has given up on. So I would actually be surprised if he started in game 4. I bet that they go to Gabe Vincent. I also think that they go to Taurean Prince over Rui Hachimura. And they just decide, no, we're gonna try to space them out. We're going to get a veteran in there. We're going to get somebody who's playing better in there. That's what I think is going to happen with the Lakers. But we'll talk about that more in segment 3. But it was just funny because, like, you could absolutely feel how painful it was for the Lakers. Absolutely feel. Just, like, this is not going anywhere for them. And the Nuggets just lulled them to sleep in the first half. They turned it on in the third quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, you've got guys like Michael Porter Jr., who hadn't played great in the first half. He got some shots to go in the third. But in the fourth quarter, Michael Porter is just making ridiculous shots. Just like, these are shot maker shots. These are ones that Michael Porter is paid to make for Denver, where he's in the mid-range. He had one toe on the line, Michael toe the line Porter Jr., for one of his two-point attempts that should have been a three. But then he had three other mid-range shots where he works his way around the perimeter, gets to a spot, rises up taller than anybody else, and hits it because he's in a rhythm, hits a shot, and he's kind of clutch. Like, I think he's proven that in this first-round series, at least. He's been doing a fantastic job of giving Denver, like, outside of the normal two-man game, Porter has been giving Denver so much energy and lift that he's been able to separate and help Denver separate in these moments. And it's been wonderful. Or he's been helping keep them in it, which is even more important. Because sometimes, like if you're D'Angelo Russell, for example, like comparatively, those two guys should be about the same level, in my opinion. Like, that's what D'Lo's paid to do. That's his role on the team. He should be about the third scorer, the third or fourth best player on the team, depending on how you look at it. Michael Porter's paid to do the same thing. And Porter is just a world better and a world more consistent on both ends of the floor than somebody like D'Lo, which is, it's great for Denver. It's why they're a champion, if we're being honest. And so he does that. Jokic takes his time and then leans into Anthony Davis and just works him up and down the floor on both ends, in the fourth quarter especially, where Davis makes zero impact and Jokic is cutting in front of his face, trying to get easy shots, and he gets easy shots and gets them for himself and for his teammates consistently. And then Aaron Gordon, who I haven't made mention of enough yet, is just dominant. It's just dominant. And he's 29 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, 12 of 18 from the field, had 5 offensive rebounds and 10 defensive rebounds, and most importantly, in my opinion, shot 5 of 6 from the line, where, I don't know if you guys remember last year, Gordon shot so well from free throws, from the free throw line, in the first couple rounds, 2.5 rounds, whatever. And then he kind of regressed back to the mean after that. But for the first couple rounds, he was so locked in that he was shooting like nearly 90% from the free throw line at that point on a lot of attempts. And he was just locked in. And he's doing something fairly similar right now, where the Nuggets have needed all of his free throws. And he's delivered every single time. It's been great. And Denver just separates. The Lakers don't have enough. They make some hero shots at the end to try to get back into it. But clearly, this Nuggets team, like, this should have been a double-digit win. That, like, Austin Reaves had a 35-footer and then got an offensive putback and things like that. This was a double-digit win masqueraded as a single-digit win. This was one where it was very, very consistent. And the Nuggets proved exactly what they were supposed to do. So I'm treating this as a 10-point win, despite the fact that it was 7. Look, this felt like all of the others, or at least most of the others. This felt like one where Denver was in control, and the Lakers had zero say. They just didn't have any consistency. And the Nuggets, they know exactly what they're trying to do. Doesn't matter who's shooting well. It doesn't matter how many shots somebody's getting. It doesn't matter. Okay, the three-point percentage isn't good. Denver's 5 of 28 from 3. 17.9%. Didn't matter. Because they worked the Lakers to the bone. Absolutely. Clearly and utterly. Worked them to the bone. And it was great to see. Like, it's just very, very clear in my mind that this Nuggets team, this Nuggets team knows exactly what they need to do. against the Lakers. They just do. And it's very, very clear that they're going to advance in this series, and there's nothing the Lakers can do to stop it. The only question is what happens in game four, and if they're going to try to extend the series to a game five. It's the only thing. So, pretty cool to be a part of that. Pretty cool to see that. And very, very exciting for Denver and for Nuggets fans that are wondering, okay, what are we going to get? How are we going to do in this situation? How's it going to feel? It feels pretty good. Feels pretty darn good. So let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to chat about just some different things, like the deja vu aspect of this. I want to give more credit to each of the Nuggets role players. We'll talk about them a little bit more in the second segment. But first, everybody, this podcast, as you know, is brought to you by our good friends over at Autograph. If you look in the bottom right corner of the screen, it says Autograph code MHS. Hold up your phone to that barcode and put in code MHS when you sign up. It lets them know that you came from us, and they're doing a great job of giving out like great opportunities for Nuggets fans and for NBA fans alike for all of their memorabilia, tickets, merchandise, things like that. They try to pay you back for being a great fan. And so it's free to sign up. All you got to do is read, go in the fan zone, go in the live feed, click on their videos, click on, this is just stuff that you would normally do on Twitter, stuff that you'd normally do on Instagram. Just go in there, sign up, use code MHS at your sign up, and you'll have plenty of opportunities to win rewards within the app. It's a really cool thing. Very excited to be a part of it. Thank you so much to Autograph to sponsor this video. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackman here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast as always. Can it be awesome if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show? 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, obviously a like on YouTube. Subscribing on YouTube would be great. This channel continues to grow. We've seen so much growth on this channel. Really excited for it. Put my heart and soul into this, if you will. So thank you for being a part of it. Really, really appreciate the support. Seeing a lot of commentary on the Joel Embiid play last night, and not just plays, because there were many of them. My take on it is that he should have been ejected and should never have been able to score 50, because what he did was a very dangerous play, and he was retaliating, and that should never be allowed, even in a playoff game. Like, sorry. Philly fans are going to... they're going to outline that as him being a competitor. They're going to outline him as saying, oh yeah, he'll do whatever it takes to win. He'll be very physical. Although I did see the rights to Ricky Sanchez guys talking about this moment, and they're talking about, probably should have been ejected. So credit to them. Credit to them for seeing that. But there are so many other fans that are going to turn a blind eye to this, and it's too bad because he was acting like a petulant child out there, and he's 7'2", and he's the strongest guy on the floor. So like, I don't know. He has had a lot of bad things happen to him. Like the Bell's palsy thing that's happening to the left side of his face. Like, that shit sucks. That's horrible. And nobody should have that happen. But it doesn't give him the opportunity to, like, take cheap shots at other players. Like, that's insane. So, I hope that he comports himself better in game four, and that he comports himself better for the rest of the series. Like, there's just no place in the league for that. None at all. So, I hope that he does better. Dr. Van Nostrand says, any Reggie update? Not that I have seen. I wonder if we don't get an update, because I'm here, obviously. I'm not in the building. I'm not asking the questions. Also, would have been a tough way to ask the questions. I probably would have gone up to Reggie in the locker room and to see if I could ask him there. But he was... So here's what happened, for those that don't know. I'm sure everybody that was here watched it and they know. But for those that didn't see it, Reggie Jackson hit a three, and it was his, like, maybe his first three of the series, I don't remember, but it was a really nice moment because Reggie's been getting a lot of criticism, and I've actually taken some criticism for defending Reggie Jackson on this pod. I've seen it, and I understand why nobody wants him to play excess minutes, but when he's only playing 8 or 9 minutes a game, I'm just not going to, like, make a big deal about it. And he hits a big three, and then he goes back down the other end of the floor, and he tries boxing out a bigger guy. I think he jumped, and then he landed on, I think it was Anthony Davis's foot, and turned his ankle. And it was bad. It looked kind of bad. And it's too bad, because like 55555-ish says here, he was actually playing okay. He was playing okay. It's very clear that he was playing reasonably. And, like, he was a plus minus of zero in his 7 minutes. And, like, obviously, he's not going to be super involved on, like, boxing out and on the glass and things like that. But he made a couple plays, had an assist, did a nice job of setting the table for folks. And I really hope that he stays healthy, because if Denver doesn't have him, if the Nuggets don't have Reggie Jackson for next game, for example, you can't run Jamal Murray into the ground. So Denver's going to have to change up their rotation. Now, what can they do? Well, usually in the regular season, they would play Colin Gillespie. Colin Gillespie is not eligible because he's a two-way contract. So you have to go with other options. What are your other options? Well, you probably slide Christian Brown or somebody similar to backup point guard. Maybe you play KCP at backup point guard. And you can either go with an 8-man rotation with just those guys, or you can go 9 and you could maybe throw in Julian Strother as a wing while somebody else is playing backup point guard. Or you could throw in Jalen Pickett to play backup point guard. I don't think that they'll do that. I think that that is a really difficult decision. It's a really tough place for any rookie to be in, because Julian, for all that he played earlier this year and deserves credit for the way that he played, I don't think he's ready for the playoffs. I just don't. And I certainly know that Jalen Pickett is not ready for the playoffs. He's not ready for how fast this thing is going to go. His confidence is not going to be there. I feel pretty strongly about that. Now, it could obviously prove me wrong, and I hope that he did, and I hope that both of those guys would in that situation. That'd be great. But I think the most likely scenario, if Reggie Jackson can't go, is that Christian plays 4 minutes a half at backup point guard, and Jamal plays the other 40. And that's just how it is. That's just how it will be. And maybe Justin Holiday plays, because, like, the way that I was talking about it on last podcast was, like, basically what Denver is doing is they are splitting up Reggie Jackson and Christian and Justin Holiday's minutes. It's like 8 minutes per, so 16 total. And that's what Bruce Brown would be giving them. Not 16, like, he'd be playing more, but Christian Brown is stepping up and playing more time as a result. So maybe Justin Holiday just plays the other 8. And, like, they change up their rotation that way. Maybe they stagger KCP a little bit more. Maybe they stagger Michael Porter a little bit more. Something like that. But I just don't think that's, like, it's not going to be that big of a deal. Nuggets fans shouldn't make it that big of a deal. But it's something that they'll have to manage. And, like, they're currently playing about an 8.5-man rotation right now. If it's cut down to 8, puts even more pressure on Christian Brown and Peyton Watson. So I hope that those guys are ready for that, because they will have some opportunities, Christian Brown especially, to really step up here and try to help out, to try to make things easier for the team. So we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. And here's a good comment. NDRW says, I don't think Reggie being out hurts the Nuggets too much in the series, but if the Wolves come through, it's going to be an issue. Yeah, it very much could be. And while I know a lot of Nuggets fans will look at what Reggie did and they'll be like, we don't want to play him in the Wolves series. Like, they're going to kill him. It's not about that. It's really just about Denver finding ways to get Jokic the ball and Murray the ball and Porter the ball and Gordon the ball in these situations. And Reggie, I know it doesn't feel like it all the time, but he does a pretty solid job of that, especially when it's on his mind. When he kind of goes rogue a little bit, that's when I can understand. But it's like, it's a couple of possessions here or there. For the most part, he does a good job making sure that Jokic gets the ball. In which case, like, that's the most important thing, right? Like, if Jokic has the ball in his hands, then it's hard to really complain about what happens, because usually good things happen. So that's what I'll say about it. I think True Teller said, he asked a question earlier. Ryan, are you worried about the three-point shooting? Yeah, I think I am. Honestly, I think I am. 5 of 28 from 3 in this series. And if you go back and look at the other two games, Denver, I think, was 8 of 34 for like 26% in the first game, or in the second game. And then they were like 34%, I want to say, in the first game. On the series as a whole, the Nuggets are shooting 26.9% from three. If we sort by three-pointers attempted, Michael Porter shooting 47.8%. He is carrying the burden. Murray's at 25%. KCP's at 26%. Jokic is at 37.5%. Christian Brown is at 0%. He's 0 of 7. Peyton Watson is 2 of 7. Reggie Jackson is 2 of 7. Those are each 28.6%. Justin Holiday is 0 for 7, and Aaron Gordon's 0 for 6. So you've got a couple guys there with Christian Brown, Justin Holiday, and Aaron Gordon that just have not hit one. And with Christian, I kind of worry about that a little bit, because I thought that would be a problem heading into it. There's a difference between regular season and playoff shooting. There just is. And fortunately for Denver, it hasn't affected them that much. They still collapse to the rim. They're still, like, that's definitely a thing. Last year, say what you want about Bruce Brown and guys of that nature, Jeff Green, whatever. Christian was asked to be the fifth option pretty consistently on the second unit. Just pretty consistently. Never had any questions about, okay. Because Jeff Green, sometimes he'd get in the post. Sometimes he'd run a pick and roll. Sometimes he'd get the kick out and then he'd drive, things like that. And Bruce Brown, obviously, second option, third option. And then Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, those guys were usually 1 and 2. Now Christian is, like, he's elevated up in terms of responsibility. And what that means is elevated up in terms of attention. And opponents know what his tendencies are from seeing him in the league for a second year. And they know that he is, like, definitely loath to taking three-point shooters unless he has to. And when your mentality is like that, sometimes you can go through these stretches where you only take these threes because you feel like you're obligated to. And not because you're open and not because you want to. Now, I'm sure that Christian, he could go 3 of 4 in the next game and shut me up, and that would be great. That's what I'm hoping for. Like, I don't care. Like, if I'm wrong here, then that's fine. But I do think that they are, between Christian and Peyton, the Nuggets don't have spacers. Justin Holiday is a spacer. He's just not shooting well. Teams react to him as a spacer. They don't react to Christian or Peyton as spacers. And so that congests the lane when the Nuggets are trying to post up Jamal Murray or run Murray AG pick and rolls, things like that. It's just a lot more difficult. And it actually makes it easier for them to trap Murray in those situations, because they could just play 4-on-3 defense on the other guys And if the ball gets to the open corner, they'll live with it. They'll be fine. It's not Murray taking the shot. So that's generally a good thing. So this is something to think about. Fortunately, the Nuggets have not been affected by it in the series so far. And maybe they won't be affected by it. Maybe in future series, the Nuggets just shoot better. This is very possible. But I am kind of worried that if things continue like this, the margins just get tighter and tighter the deeper into the playoffs you go. And it looks like Denver will face the Minnesota Timberwolves in the next round, unless Phoenix has anything to say about it. Minnesota, Phoenix, they play tonight at 8:30 Mountain, so we'll see what happens with that. If Minnesota wins that game, then that series is basically over. Denver will have to get ready for Minnesota, and Minnesota's the best defense that they will face. So I'm thinking about it, and I hope that Denver is just saving their three-point makes for the next round. That would be my take. Am I expecting it? Not really. Fortunately, Denver is like, it's one of the skills that they have. It's one of the traits that they have as a team. They do not need three-point shooting in order to win. They never have. But it gives them a little edge. It gives them a nice little bit of breather, and that generally helps. When Denver makes a lot of threes, especially against good teams, they generally do a great job. So I hope that they find an opportunity there. Last thing, though. Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter. I mentioned this in the first segment. I want to make sure to mention it again. Those guys, they need a ton of credit. 15 rebounds for Aaron Gordon, 10 rebounds for Porter. They know exactly what is expected of them in this playoffs. And they have delivered consistently so far. Sometimes there's a couple random plays here or there, like Aaron Gordon, he'll make a weird pass, make a weird turnover, yada yada. Sometimes Michael Porter will take a shot that you don't agree with. Sometimes he'll miss a pass that you think he has to make. But for the vast majority of their possessions so far, they have been so steady. Aaron Gordon doing all the things connectively that you need him to do. Michael Porter hitting the important shots that you need him to hit within a run or to keep Denver afloat or to give them the separation that they need. Michael Porter's doing that again. For as much attention as Jokic gets, and he's the best player in the world, not close. For as much attention as he gets, for as much attention as Murray gets, Murray has not been that great this series, like from a shooting percentage perspective. And honestly, like, I kind of don't know if I expect that to change. Like, Murray might get hot. That's very possible. I just wonder how affected he is physically right now, Murray. And with that being the case, you know that Jokic is going to continue playing great. Like, that's just what he does. But if Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter continue to play like this, which is supersized third and fourth options, not even like normal third and fourth options, then they can give Denver the margin of advantage that they need consistently. KCP also deserves a shout out for the way that he gets over screens. LeBron has not figured out a great way to go at him. He'll get into the paint. He will drive. But there are enough possessions within a run where LeBron is often like he'll take the path of least resistance. But then, like, if KCP eliminates that in those situations, Denver's in a good spot. Denver's in a really good place. So been really, really impressed with the way that they handled that. Been really, really impressed with the way that the Nuggets have continued to empower those guys and put them into positions to succeed. And those guys have taken the reins. Michael Porter, Aaron Gordon, and deserve so much credit for the way that this first series has gone. Because without Aaron Gordon, like, he's outplayed Austin Reeves, to be clear. He's outplayed D'Angelo Russell, to be clear. Michael Porter done the same thing. Neither of those guys, Austin Reeves or D'Angelo Russell, can say that they've really played close to the level that Denver's third and fourth options have. That's a big, big deal. So, really excited for it. Let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about what Game 4 could potentially look like, as well as take a look around the playoff picture. If you have any questions, in the chat. Drop them now on what the playoffs look like, on what the rest of the playoff picture looks like. What are you looking at? What do you want me to talk about?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back at it, Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Would really, really appreciate it. True Teller says, Ryan, this looks like regular season Jamal that you may need to trade for Luka in a couple of years. I don't know. If they win another championship and then they're set up to win another one going forward, then do they have to? No. Like, I mean, it would be cool. To be clear, if Luka and Jokic together would be really cool. I'm not here sitting here and saying that they shouldn't. But as long as they are continuing to win championships and continuing to put Jokic in positions where he can just deliver at the end, there's no problem with, like, Jamal should stick around. Like, this is a peanut butter and jelly, man. Like, there's no reason to break this up sooner than what you think. Like, what you're doing is assuming that they will fail. Or that they will, like, falter going forward. Or that maybe Murray will not be healthier in a future playoff series. And he might not be. He might not be. But I will continue to have faith in Jamal. I'll continue to have faith in Nikola. I'll continue to have faith in them together and the like what the Nuggets have put together here. Until proven otherwise. Because, like, why would I deviate? Why would anybody deviate at this point? Why would the Nuggets deviate? This is not the time to really talk about that. If the Nuggets lose, if they get eliminated from the playoffs, we can start having those discussions. But until then, like, I just want to continue to give those guys the benefit of the doubt. They're champions, man. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Come on. Off constantly says, Jokic and Jamal have the best two-man game in the league. Jamal just hasn't gotten into a rhythm yet. Absolutely. Like, it's perfectly fine. They did not need a ton from Jamal last night. Because that's what happens when you've got guys that can step up, like Porter and AG. And here's the thing, like, Jamal's never been an all-star. I know that people like to talk about him. Oh yeah, like he's a superstar. There are all-stars in this league that have never done what Jamal does. Jamal has flaws. Like, he does. Sometimes he's not healthy enough. Sometimes he can make a decision that leaves you questioning a little bit. Sometimes his defense isn't where it probably needs to be. But this is what you get. Like, you get a guy who can hit a game winner even after playing poorly for much of that game. You get a guy who can raise his assist average as much as he has and be a great facilitator for the rest of the team. Like, he helped put Porter and Gordon into positions to succeed last night. He had 9 assists. He was very good. Just didn't shoot the ball well. So, I also think that he does a great job on the defensive end when teams go at him. Like, he's very timely. When teams go at him, when they try to make a point and say, okay, we're going to go at Jamal. We're going to attack him. There are enough possessions that Jamal has where he forces the opposing team to kind of go a different direction. And that's important in this situation because the moment you trade somebody like Jamal, you're just changing everything. So I'm never, like, I hope that they never have to break up this team. I hope that they never, under any circumstances, have to break up this group. Like, there's just no reason at all to deviate. I think the Nuggets would, like, at this point, I think they agree. So hopefully they can continue to keep this group together for as long as possible. Okay, already spent more time on that than I probably should have. Okay, the rest of the playoffs. Actually, no, let's talk about Game 4. What's going to happen in Game 4? How are the Nuggets going to handle it? I think the Nuggets are probably going to go to that like pretty consistently. They are going to try to start the game a little bit faster, I would assume. But here's the thing. It's like the Lakers have taken a double-digit lead in the first half every single time. I expect them to probably do the same. They will probably do the same. Last year when the Lakers were down 3-0, LeBron put together just a tremendous first half. And then he gassed out, and he wasn't able to do a bunch in the third and fourth quarters especially. And there was nobody else that was really able to step up in those moments. Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Davis, didn't really matter. They didn't really have enough gas left in the tank in that moment. And then Denver hit some heinous shots, including the famous Jokic off one leg, leaning to his left, running to his left, basically, just fling up to the rim, and that goes down. I wonder if we see more shots like that. I wonder if we see more backbreakers like that, where Denver just is in their bag. They have all the confidence in the world. They just know that they need to get to specific places on the floor in order for Joker to take over. And I wonder if he really tries to take over in that one. There's been a deja vu here with the way that these games have gone. I wrote about this on milehighsports.com. Game one of last year's Lakers series was exactly like game one of this year's Lakers series, where Joker just steps up pretty consistently. Everybody plays really well behind him. The Lakers, they find their ways to score, but ultimately Denver separates and you could see a very clear gap. Then the Lakers make adjustments, and the Nuggets, they have to fight back in game two. Murray takes over in the fourth quarter of game two, and Denver ultimately squeaks out a win that they probably should not have had. Game three, Denver goes on the road and they play a pretty steady game. Michael Porter has a great game. Denver gets help from the role players. Jokic gets into foul trouble. It really is crazy how things have mirrored each other. How Denver's Western Conference Final Series last year has mirrored this first round series against the Lakers. And Denver's won all three games. So will game four mirror that as well? I don't know at all. I think that there's a very clear possibility that Jokic throws up some heinous shots and he gets those to go, and maybe Murray delivers, and maybe LeBron, like we talked about before, just goes for 30 points in the first half and then gasses out. But I do think that Denver has an opportunity to lead. I think that the Lakers will probably make a change to their starting lineup, as I mentioned before. If I had to guess, I would say that D'Angelo Russell gets benched and that they go with Gabe Vincent in his place, and that they go with Taurean Prince in place of Rui Hachimura. If that is what happens, then that changes a little bit. For what the Nuggets are supposed to do in those situations offensively and defensively. Jokic will have to guard AD, and he'll have to do it well. He hasn't done a great job of it so far this series. Like, AD's had 30 points in each of the games, and it really isn't until Aaron Gordon starts defending Anthony Davis that really changes things. Maybe Jokic will defend Taurean Prince a little bit. That would be, I guess, a possibility, but Denver's going to have to find ways to figure out how to manage that, because the Lakers, I think, are going to score. The difference is they're going to be smaller. Gabe Vincent is smaller. Taurean Prince is smaller. It's very possible that they play more three-guard lineups with LeBron at the four, AD at the five, and then somebody like a Spencer Dinwiddie along with Gabe Vincent and Austin Reeves. So if that's the case, then Denver's going to have to be better offensively. They just are. They're going to have to shoot better. They're going to have to drive better. They're going to have to use their cuts. They're going to have to get behind the defense. They're going to have to go for offensive rebounds, things like that. And they have to execute really, really well. Because if they don't, it wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers really get out and run. If they really execute pretty well on the other end of the floor, and Denver just has some problems defending them. But can I say anything other than I think the Nuggets will sweep the Lakers? I think that they will. At this point, like, the Lakers are broken. They'll try things. LeBron is somebody who's going to, like, he's going to play hard. Anthony Davis will probably play hard. Can they expect a bunch from D'Angelo Russell? Could they expect a bunch from the rest of their bench? I don't know. It also wouldn't surprise me if this mirrors the T-Wolves series from the first round last year, where Denver gets up and they get a 3-0 lead, and then they mess around a little bit, and then, oh, crap. Denver kind of gave up the rope a little bit, and they let the Lakers win Game 4, and now you have to go back to Game 5, and then the Lakers give them hell in Game 5, and Denver has to really fight in that one. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, folks. I think that it's very important for Denver to try to take out Denver, or to try to take out LA in Game 4. If they get an opportunity, they'll get more rest opportunities. They'll have plenty of time to sort of recover from the mental stress of playing the Lakers, which there's just a lot that goes on. You're at the spotlight. There's a lot that goes on at that. It's a little bit different from facing the T-Wolves in the first round last year. So I think in general that if Denver can take care of this in 4, it's going to really help them. It'll be good. That is not a hot take by any stretch of the word, but I would look for Murray to try to get going a little bit more. I would look for KCP to try to get going a little bit more. I remember in Game 4 of last year's playoff series against the Lakers, where KCP, I think, really played well. That is anecdotal. Don't quote me on that, but I just have that recollection. And then if Joker took over and really kind of put a stamp on the series, that'd be great too. Like just 35, 40 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists. How dope would that be? That'd be sick. All right. I think that is everything that I've got for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll. What a way for this series to go. I thought that the Lakers would get one of these first three games. I did not expect a sweep. I expected Nuggets in 5. Maybe that still happens, but it just feels like the momentum is just continuing to push the Lakers out of the way of the Nuggets. It's wild to feel. Wild to see. Everybody, that is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Autograph. Make sure to go scan that barcode in the bottom right corner. Really appreciate all the love and support. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. It's always great to be able to do this. I'm going to be potting with Swipa probably on Sunday, I'll say. We'll probably do a podcast on Sunday, Weekends with Swipa style. Should be a great, great time. Really appreciate everybody for locking in with us. And we'll have some comments. We'll have some commentary on Game 4, I think, as well, that should go out tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast. As always, we'll talk to you guys very soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.